Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. Our big conversation today is focused on higher education and how the pandemic and the cost to get a degree at California universities is shaping the current debate. According to a recent survey from the think tanks New America and Third Way, an increasing number of students worry degrees earned during the pandemic may be devalued by employers. So they wonder if higher education is worth the price. This, as President Joe Biden was questioned last week during a CNN town hall regarding his plans to help financially struggling students.
We need student loan forgiveness beyond the potential $10,000 your administration has proposed. We need at least a $50,000 minimum. What will you do to make that happen?
I will not make that happen.
All right, pretty clear there. I will not make that happen. Today, we're talking about the affordability and practicality of attending college at this time and the road ahead for colleges and universities. First up for this discussion is senior reporter for The Chronicle of Higher Education, Eric Kelderman, who's based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Insight. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Randall. It's great to be with you.
So, Eric, I want to start by diving into this debate over student loan forgiveness. We just heard from the president there saying he has no plans to go up to $50,000 per student. Help us understand what the administration wants, what advocates are asking, and then how that's all being debated in Congress.
Right. Well, the issue of loan forgiveness has been really gaining a lot of political momentum in recent years. Senator Elizabeth Warren has been driving a lot of that, and a lot of progressive groups on the Democratic side are really pushing the administration for that $50,000 in debt. Mr. Biden, the president, has been fairly clear, I think, through the campaign and of course, in his most recent remarks that he doesn't think that $50,000 is an amount that he has the, I guess, the authority to approve. He has been consistent also in saying that he would agree to a $10,000 amount of loan forgiveness. It's not clear, though, however, whether he would do that through executive action or whether he's really pushing Congress. I think this messaging that the administration has put out makes it seem like they really want Congress to approve that. And Congress, I guess, could do that potentially through some budget legislation, through a budget reconciliation bill.
Mm-hmm. What is the president's abilities when it comes to this, if he wanted to go up to 50,000? Because I've heard Senator Warren and others say it is within his power.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, the progressive side of the party has really, been saying that it is within his legal authority. I'm just the reporter. I don't
right.
Understand necessarily the limits of executive action there. The president has reportedly been looking at this issue for some time now. And again, I think the messaging is clear that he would feel more comfortable if Congress were to do that. And certainly that would be in some ways the cleaner way to do it, because it would be less likely to end up in the courts. If, as we've seen with previous administrations, executive action can be challenged in court quite easily, and then you end up with a lot of, many months of wrangling. What, as your listeners may know, payments, by the way, on federally backed student loans have been paused through September. So nobody's making payments or paying interest on their loans if those loans were issued by the U.S. Department of Education.
So we have the financial struggles that the students are facing and have faced prior to the pandemic, of course. What impact has the pandemic had on the finances of colleges and universities? We are seeing a record number of students in the California State University system, but it's sort of hit and miss, right, throughout the country, depending on the types of colleges that you have?
The colleges that were more likely to suffer enrollment losses this past fall, were community colleges. Mm-hmm. They saw overall a decline of about 10% in enrollment, which doesn't sound like a lot, but actually it can make a big difference for some of these institutions. And freshman enrollment overall was down quite a bit. But yeah, places like California State, I know have done quite well. A lot of the institutions that decided to go in person also saw very solid numbers in terms of enrollment. Where the institutions have suffered in financially has been a couple of things. One, if you don't have all the students on your campus, you still have to pay to maintain the dorms and things like that. So there are fixed costs. Those don't go away, even if your students aren't paying room and board. So, and then the increased costs of opening up campus if you're providing, say, PPE or testing for students and staff, things like that. So there are increased costs of operation. You've lost some revenues on the room and board side, and sometimes in student fees. But those are, those sound like, on the edges, but it could be 10 or 15% of your revenues for a year. And that's a pretty big hit for some of these institutions.
Mm-hmm. How about this issue of the degrees not being worth as much, or at least considered to be not worth as much, because a portion of that instruction came, virtually, and it wasn't that in-class, in-person experience that employers may want, down the road?
Maybe. I mean, my saying is, when Goldman Sachs starts hiring high school graduates, then you should stop worrying about getting a college degree, right? Most of the jobs that will be created in the coming century or, 20, 30, 40 years are going to require some sort of post-secondary education. And certainly, we've seen employers favor certain kinds of institutions in certain industries, right? Prestigious, very selective colleges. Those graduates are very likely going to have no problem getting a job, right? If you go to UC Berkeley or Stanford or one of the Ivies, and you're taking most of your classes remotely, I still think you're going to be on pretty solid ground when it comes to job hunting, right? When the economy recovers. And then as you go down the list, that may change, of course, but still, for better or for worse, employers use college degrees as a signaling device to let them know that this person has gone through this process, has some ability to stick with things, has some knowledge about the things that they've gotten their degree in. So I guess, but I the other side of this, if you're not going to hire college graduates for these jobs, who are you going to hire, right? So, I hear that, but I think we're going to have to see how that plays out over time.
Because it's I guess it's a pretty level playing field. Everyone's playing by mostly the same rules, at least for the past year.
Well, I want to say it's a level playing field. Like I mentioned, I think, we've seen this sell the graduates of selective colleges are always going to have those connections, are always going to have the cachet that comes with that degree. And so, there's a pecking order that is not a level playing field.
I see, yeah.
Because the people that goes to those institutions are overwhelmingly white and wealthy to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Eric, you are a senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education, and I imagine there's been about a year to reflect on how universities and colleges dealt with the pandemic initially and then moving forward. Do you feel that they were properly prepared for something like this to happen? I mean, none of us really saw something like this happening, right? But
this is as they say, this is a black swan event, right? This is a let's hope this is a once in a lifetime experience for all of us. No, I mean, I think a lot of institutions were certainly, our society was not prepared for this, but I think colleges by and large have done the best that they can do. It's been a bumpy road, but a lot of them are going to learn lessons. A lot of them, frankly, are going to have improved technological infrastructure that has improved their online learning experience. And I think going forward, that will benefit a lot of students. They've learned a lot about the admissions process, about recruiting students virtually, that I think will help underprivileged students who might not be able to travel to those campuses as easily. They can still get some connection or feel like they can get a better understanding of those institutions without making that expensive trip. So there will be lessons learned. And the damage will be long lasting. I mean, the students that didn't go to college this fall, there could be ripple effects for them down the road. It may be that economically, some of the students that couldn't afford to show up this fall may not have that opportunity again next year or the year after or the year after that. So there will be damage done, and some institutions are going to close because of this, mm-hmm. A few.
We have confirmation hearings going on in Congress for the president's cabinet. What is the consensus regarding an education secretary?
I think that the vote on Mr. Cardona will be pretty clean. There will be some Republicans that vote no, but the majority of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate Help Committee voted to approve Mr. Cardona, and I don't think he's going to have any problem in the Senate. He's got a lengthy career in education, and although he's a little bit of a blank slate, and he's very young, but certainly he has, I think, the qualifications that most senators would expect for a Secretary of Education.
We're hearing a lot about vaccination for secondary schools. What is the vaccination plan for colleges and universities? Does it vary from school to school?
It's evolving. I mean, what we're seeing, I think, is higher ed has tried to play some central role in this by developing their own testing. Certainly a lot of some of the research that has come along for the vaccines has come from these research universities. The question will be, I think, for higher ed will be, how soon will all faculty and students be able to be vaccinated, and what will be the standards that they set for coming back to campus in the fall? So if you decide you're going to open for the fall, and a lot of campuses are making that decision, the Cal State system has made that decision already, will you try to require students or encourage them to a very strong degree to get them vaccinated before they can come back to campus fully? That's going to be an interesting discussion, I think, that we're going to see play out over the next few months. And it will depend a lot on the availability of vaccine, of course, and how quickly people can get shots in the arms. Mm.
Eric Kelderman is a senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He's based in Washington, D.C. Eric, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Up next, a closer look at the affordability of higher education right now in California and what student debt looks like during COVID-19. We'll also be joined by Sacramento State President Robert Nelson and Stanislaus State President Ellen Jun. You can shoot us an email with your thoughts, insight@capradio.org, or use the Twitter hashtag #AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White, and we are back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. And today we're talking about the affordability and practicality of attending college during the pandemic and the road ahead for colleges and universities responding to the challenges of COVID-19. A recent survey of college students found an increasing majority worry the pursuit of higher education might not be worth the price. The same survey conducted by the think tanks New America and Third Way also found widespread concern that employers will devalue a degree earned during the pandemic. Student debt costs are also an unmistakable catalyst in those doubts, and President Joe Biden explained during a CNN town hall last week what he plans to do in order to alleviate the student debt crisis. Here's a little of what he had to say.
We should be eliminating interest on the debts that are accumulated. Number one, and number two, I'm prepared to write off
the $10,000 debt, but not 50.
Well, Jesse Ryan is the executive vice president of the Campaign for College Opportunity. It's a California-based public advocacy group, and she joins us now. Welcome. Nice to have you here, Jesse.
Thank you for having me.
So help us understand what your organization does in this whole mix.
Well, our organization is a statewide nonprofit that really focuses on first illuminating the challenges that students are facing across the state through research and through lifting up the voices of students so that they can share their experiences firsthand, and then really delving deeply into figuring out public policy solutions and ways to advocate so that the state budget reflects some of the values that we're hearing campuses and students need to see investments in.
And what does student debt and affordability look like right now in California?
Well, I think that it's really challenging. There's no way around it. I mean, our students are experiencing unprecedented times. And we know that students already were facing, on average, 1 in 3 housing insecurity and insecurity with food prior to the pandemic. But what happened was the pandemic really accelerated those inequities. And we're seeing students grappling to be able to put food on the table and keep a roof over their head and maintain their enrollment in colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, how has the pandemic played a major role in all of that? Like, what is the driving force?
So I think that people often, when they think about college students, have this image of support systems that college students might have. What they fail to recognize sometimes is that so many of our college students are a support system to their families or are raising children of their own. And so, you know, what we're seeing is that students are not only being forced into a new way of learning, going virtually overnight from having the opportunity to have in-person instruction to being online, but they're also trying to figure out how do they just, you know, continue to maintain their life? How do they continue to eat? How do they continue to, if they're helping to support their families, ensure that they can contribute to rent and other total cost of living? And I think that one of the things that perhaps is a bright spot around the pandemic is we were talking about these issues, but we were talking about these issues in perhaps too superficial a way pre-pandemic. And the pandemic has forced these deeper conversations about the complexity of student lives and experiences, understanding who they are and the myriad competing interests that they have and pressures in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense of how California stacks up against other states when it comes to student debt, enrollment, financial struggles, et cetera?
Great question. Well, I think you probably are aware, given the size of our state, California actually has the largest college student population in the country, which means that, you know, at our community college system, 115 colleges across the state, we're educating about a fourth of the country's college population.
Wow.
We are a pretty affordable public university and college system, but you know, I don't want that to cause us to become complacent, because I think one of the realities is that people often believe college affordability is waiving tuition, that if we can offer free community college as we do in California, that we have solved the affordability conundrum. I'm very proud of the fact that California made a move a couple years ago to offer 2 years of free community college. But if we're not addressing the total cost of attendance, the real costs of college, and that's housing, transportation, and books, our students will continue to struggle. And on that front, we have a long way to go to make sure that we're meeting students' needs.
Housing is an issue on so many different levels. How do we attack it for the students?
Well, I will say, you just talked about the fact that, you know, Joe Biden and federal government right now is looking at ways to increase financial aid and reduce student debt. We think that that is a big part of the equation. But in California, we also have to do a better job in targeting our financial aid to our neediest students. So, you know, one of the things that we know is that our students aren't receiving adequate aid to be able to cover the cost of their rent in regions across the state. There is a proposal right now in California called the California CalGrant Modernization Proposal that would significantly expand both the number of students receiving aid and ensure that some of our most vulnerable students have more money that they can put towards things like rent and housing costs.
Mm-hmm. And that's in the legislature?
That is actually about to be introduced by the California Student Aid Commission.
Mm. All right. What about California's approach to student debt collections? How does that factor in?
Well, I think you probably heard that one of the bright spots right now as a result of our new administration is that there was very quick executive action taken to extend the life of being able to pause our student loan payments. So we now have an additional time period where students will not be forced to pay back student loans till September of this year, and they will accrue no interest. So very important that students understand that. You know, we know that it would be a much more progressive action if we were to see the federal government waive $50,000 in debt. Joe Biden has talked about $10,000 now instead of the original $50,000 that he had proposed. I think we're going to have the courage to take more ambitious actions to help eliminate student debt, which is really crippling for so many students across the state.
Jesse, I want to make sure that I give you time to talk about this next thing. The Campaign for College Opportunity is releasing a report tomorrow on the state of higher education for Black Californians, but I understand that you can't and share some of the key findings with us this morning?
I can. I hope that those who are listening will join us tomorrow as we release the report and preview the findings on a webinar at 10:30 in the morning. I think it's a very timely report, given the fact that we're really dealing with a dual pandemic here. We're dealing with the challenges of a global health pandemic and a racial reckoning. And the State of Higher Ed for Black Californians is part of a series that the Campaign for College Opportunity produces every 2 years, looking at demographic data and using that to talk about access issues, progression issues, completion issues, and opportunity gaps that exist in higher ed. One of the really troubling findings of the State of Higher Ed for Black Californians is that while we have seen some real remarkable progress at the California State University front of increasing the number of Black Californians who are graduating, almost doubling the rate, we are continuing to see persistent opportunity gaps. And more troubling, we're seeing that our community college students, our Black community college students, are transferring at higher rates to for-profit colleges across the state. We know that we have to do a better job of making sure that our public colleges and universities are attracting and retaining our brilliant Black students. And one of the ways we can do that is ensuring that we are hiring faculty that reflect the diversity of the state. One of our previous reports left out talks about the lack of faculty diversity at every level of California public colleges and universities. If we aren't compelled to take action now to ensure we better reflect our student demographics, I don't know when we will.
Well, Jesse, we have two people coming up who can help answer that very question there. I really appreciate you being on. Jesse Ryan is the executive vice president for the Campaign for College Opportunity. It's a California-based public advocacy group, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Also, we'll provide a link to that webinar at capradio.org on the Insight page. Thanks a lot. And we are talking about colleges and universities and how they're responding to the challenges brought on by the pandemic, plus just, you know, years of ongoing financial issues, both on the side of students and on the side of the universities. Among them, convincing students that the college experience is still worth the cost, even when most classes and other functions are online. Joining us right now is Sacramento State President Robert Nelson. Great to have you here. And coming up in just a little bit, we'll also be joined by Stanislaus State President Ellen Jun. President Nelson, it's good to see you.
It's really good to see you this morning.
So you just heard Jesse there saying that while there was some positive news in regards to the number of Black students now attending state schools, including Sacramento State, there's still a disparity when it comes to the faculty and staff reflecting the student body. What is Sac State doing to rectify that?
That's an incredibly important question, because our students deserve the opportunity to be able to be taught by people who look like them, people who have had similar experiences, people who can understand and identify with them. So we are very actively recruiting new people. And in fact, I just came out of a meeting just a few minutes ago about our hiring practices for next semester and how we're going to put more emphasis on having diverse pools and coming forward. We've established a vice president for inclusive excellence and diversity here, Diana Tate Vermeer. She has hired a person who is working on training the committees so that they remove their implicit bias, and also so that they know how to have robust pools and good advertisements and do the right things to track. She's also got another person that is working on their transition as they come here. And we have over 100 people working on 7 committees currently on anti-racism and anti-bias, so that we really do reach out and extend welcome to everyone here at Sac State.
President Nelson, I don't know if you know this number, but about how many people are hired every year at Sac State? You have, of course, just natural turnover that happens and then new jobs created. What's the university looking at in terms of number of people hired?
Well, we've hired as many as 77 people, and we've hired as few as 25. Okay, it depends upon the budget. With the budget cut this last year, we only are going to hire about 30, right in that number. But with the restoration that the governor announced of the $299 million cut to the California State University, we're going to be able to be up into the 40s and high 40s and early 50s next year.
All right, let's bring in now Stanislaus State President Ellen Jun. President Jun, nice to have you here.
Hi, thank you so much. Very happy to be with you.
So there's been some debate about, or at least concern on the part of students, that a degree right now isn't really worth what they're paying because of the remoteness and, you know, the lack of facilities that are involved, and that employers may down the road see the degree as less worthy. How are you addressing that with students, and what's your defense for, at least at Stanislaus State, why these degrees are still just as valid?
Oh, my goodness. It's not just as not valid. It's actually becoming more, extremely more important to have a bachelor's degree. I mean, the results and data are showing that because our society is becoming so much more technologically complex, that there are reports that something like two-thirds, three-fourths of all jobs in the future are going to require a minimum of a bachelor's degree. And I would say that here's the other thing, is that nationally speaking, the CSU and my campus in particular is showing up as in the national rankings as one of the, as a university and as a system. CSU is showing that our campuses are producing students with much greater upward mobility. And it's particularly true here in the Central Valley. About only 18% of residents who live in our Central Valley, about 8 counties, is college educated. And that means that over a lifetime, they're likely to earn less than $1 million less than someone with a bachelor's degree.
Wow.
And in addition, that's why we are so focused on trying to help our students. My campus has 74-75% are the first in their family to get a college degree, the first one. And we're largely agricultural, so there's not a lot of opportunity, and that the university has such an important role in that. So students come to us with great hopes and dreams, and they get their bachelor's, and we want them to succeed. So I'll just say the business and industry is absolutely poised to want to think about having our students be their future workforce. Our students don't necessarily want to leave 85% of our students want to stay in the Central Valley after they get their bachelor's, but they're not sure where to get a job. So we have instituted a brand new program, Career Ready U. So I have been meeting with the CEOs of not just business industry, also governments, mayor's offices, healthcare, et cetera, and getting them to sign on as our Career Ready U partners, founding partners. So I have 19 CEOs that signed on. A lot of this was done just before COVID hit. Mm. And so now they have the opportunity to access not just of our students in the pipeline, like let's say they want an accountant for tax season, they can go in online and using our Handshake program and ask, I want an accounting student, a senior with a GPA of a 3.5 or higher, and then they can actually access their resumes. They don't have to wait for career day. So these are things that we're working directly to bridge. We're working with our Stanislaus County Workforce Development Division to try and also offer internships so students can get internships that are paid through federal dollars to work in the local community. And it's a bridge for students for the pipeline, building the pipeline, especially important during the time of pandemic as we come out of the pandemic. Hmm. People eventually will need to hire and rehire and expand the workforce, and we are poised to make that happen. So absolutely, if you ever come to one of our commencements, it is so joyful because parents can see their young student branching off and setting out to have an incredible life for themselves and their families in the future. And a BA is the beginning of that success, moving up in the classroom. So I absolutely disagree. Every time I see those news stories, I think, oh my goodness, people don't see the full picture. Not having a college degree is, doesn't allow you to move forward. And especially again, with the technology that's happening in our society, having those skills are critical for moving not their families forward, but the whole region.
And the value of what's being paid by the student meets that of that degree?
I'm sorry? We are, the CSU has one of the lowest tuition rates in the country. It's about $7,600 on my campus for tuition and fees for a year. Compare that to, Harvard, it's, what is it now, $60,000, $70,000? It's approaching that range. So it is one of the most economical yet high quality degrees. In fact, 1 in 10 people in the United States is a CSU alum, believe mm-hmm. it or not, workers. So we are extremely powerful, and these degrees set students on to a pathway for success. And it's very inexpensive comparatively.
President Nelson, for many people that are trying to get a four-year degree, that starts at the community college level. And as I understand, the CSU system is working closely with community colleges, closer than ever before, in terms of being able to take classes at both while you're enrolled at the CSU.
Yes, so I was just in a meeting with Willie Duncan from Sierra College. And one of our goals is to have dual admissions to allow the students to be in part of Sierra College as well as part of here. Mm-hmm. We're also working on reverse transfer so that your classes that you take here will count back in the community college so that you can get your associate's degree and come forward with that. It's a very important step. We will accept over 9,000 students this year, and we will graduate 9,000 students as well. Of those students that we accept, close to 5,000 will be transfer students from Los Rios, from Sierra, from Yuba City, for all over the place. And we're excited to have them come here because they are graduating at an extremely high graduation rate. Over 75% of them are graduating within 4 years, and over 60% are graduating within 2 years now. So those are outstanding students getting a great education.
I'm a strong supporter of it. The very last class I took to get my degree was at Sac City College. The one right before that was at Sacramento State. And I was one of those two-year transfer students early on. And that was way back in the 80s, but we we won't get into that.
Can I just piggyback on that? So Robert's doing great things in the SAC region. And similarly, we're trying to do other things as well. So we have what's called the WOW program, Warriors on the Way. So what we have done is sign MOUs between our four major feeder community colleges. And so that students, whether they're at Delta in Stockton, for example, or MJC, Modesto Junior College, Columbia, Merced Community College, those students, now we have advisors placed on their campus. They have given us an office space. We have funded them now as it started as grant funded through the College Futures, helped us to do the implementation and planning grants, almost totaling to $1 million, so that we could create this pipeline. So students coming to the JC can go to an office and say, I would like to get a BA, and we can start giving them advice, holding events to get them seamlessly transferred to us, and knowing what degree programs, and getting to meet our students on the campus as well. So that's our WOW, Warrior on the Way program. And so we believe deeply in making that pipeline and keeping that going together. We're also talking, as Robert says, thinking about doing some dual enrollment possibly. That's a big thing, I think, in the governor's plan, is to help make that transition a very smooth one. And so we're looking into that. I meet regularly with the presidents and their teams at least two or three times a semester. So we're all telling each other what's going on and how can we improve, especially during the pandemic when students are feeling more, want to be more connected.
So yeah. President Jun, what's the vaccination plan and your university, your campus open up in the fall, right?
Well, all of us are. We're all struggling to figure out how we can meet the health regulations of each county and the 6-foot distancing that limits the capacity of our classes. But I can say really excited that my campus signed on with our Stanislaus County Public Health. So our gymnasium has been converted into a vaccination center. And throughout the state, as you know, the availability of the vaccine is difficult right now. But it was scheduled to be open 7 days a week from like 8 in the morning to 8 p.m. So that's been cut back. So some weeks we only can open one day, some weeks 2 days. But I can tell you today, I am so excited because I am not yet 60, but I'm over the 50-year mark. And so now I can go. This is the first day of phase 1B where educators can get vaccinated. So I'm going to be standing in line later this morning to see if I can get my vaccination. My husband has his. So we're hoping that we can get many more people in our campus community, as well as the K-12 community, started to be vaccinated in our county starting today. Yeah. And it'll happen at my campus. So we're excited about that.
And President Nelson on the Sac State campus?
We have the vaccination clinic up and running. It's been up and running for about 4 weeks now. We've vaccinated close to 3,000 people. Everyone who is teaching on campus right now has either had his or her shot or has an appointment for his or her shot. We're beginning to vaccinate local teachers as well here on our campus and everyone over 65. So it is working very, very smoothly. I love going over there because when you're in there, everybody comes out. You're used to people being, kind of sullen and everything. And they just come out saying, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, there's hope. So, it's that sense of hope, right?
There's real hope. And we'll see the university opening up this fall. We're identifying classes right now. We'll be over 50%, I think, of the courses will be face-to-face. And we're identifying what courses those are. The faculty are excited to come back. And the faculty that have learned to teach online are looking forward to continuing what they've learned to do so well there. Yeah. So we'll have a hybrid move.
Yeah, I'm wondering about how long that hybrid will stick around, possibly forever. President Jun, the pandemic really pushed us in a direction that things were headed anyway. How much of online learning do you expect to be permanent?
You know, it's time will tell, but I think it's been a really massive experience for students to experience and the faculty to experience. There are really some things that work very well on virtual learning, whether it's Zoom or the little breakout rooms with Zoom and all of those kinds of things. So some things faculty have said they would keep going, even if it is face-to-face. So
Where does it fail? Where does it lag?
Well, I don't know if it fails or lags. I mean, it's certainly anytime anyone gets a new delivery mode, there's an adjustment time. And so we've had a, you know, two rounds at this now, and now people are, I think, probably be moving in kind of a hybrid fashion, so that, you know, I think people generally prefer to be face to face, but there are some things that you can do really well. And students, of course, kind of like the fact that they don't have to commute, that, and because they have work schedules as well, that it makes it easier to turn on their computer and hit the Zoom button. Mm-hmm. So I think that it'll be enriching our pedagogical, you know, teaching styles in a way that will expand opportunity for students because of this experience.
So yeah,
I'm hopeful.
President, and, you know, oh, and go ahead.
Mm-hmm. One other final thing is that our faculty have been wonderful in terms of trying to learn more about this new technology, because we were all forced to do it like overnight, right? So I just, my hat is off to people for really hitting the reset button and trying a whole new way of teaching and interacting with students. And like 700 of our faculty signed up to take a whole series of many different kinds of workshops. And so they're all in this mode of exploring and learning. And I think that's, as I said, will enrich the college experience.
Yeah. And on that note, President Nelson, as horrific as the pandemic has been, there have been some silver linings. What has Sac State learned during the pandemic that you consider valuable moving forward?
Well, the first thing is we've learned the quality of our faculty. We always knew that they were quality, okay? But they have stepped up, as Ellen said, they have all stepped up and really shown how much they care about their students and what they will do for their students. They make themselves more available than they've ever been available, whether it's answering emails at crazy times of night or during the day. They've gone through training to be able to do this. We've had classes, I've seen plays done in living rooms, in bedrooms, okay? I've seen dances done in garages. I've seen art just blossom in ways that I never thought it would happen. And I've seen the people come together and celebrate each other. These are tough times, but they're good times. And they're times when we can be introspective and we can see and talk about what we need to do better. And that's what's happening.
I've hosted this show from my den.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not there today, but yeah, some of the contortions we've done at Cap Radio to get around all of this as well has been interesting, which we are licensed to Sac State. I should probably mention that. Sacramento State President Robert Nelson, also Stanislaus State President Ellen Jun, thank you both so much for sharing your insights at such a high level in the CSU system.
Thank you.
And best to everyone. Thank you so much, Randall.
You bet. All right. Still ahead, we hear from an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley about his experience during the pandemic and the recent article he wrote on why Pell Grants need to double. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we are back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. This is Insight, and we're talking, rather, about the affordability and practicality of attending college at this time and what the road ahead looks like for higher education. The pandemic has upended the system, adding strain to those already under financial stress and raising questions, you know, worries for faculty members concerned about their health and job security. Edgar Oseguera Martinez is a third-year undergraduate student studying business and public policy at UC Berkeley. He's also an Aspire Student Advocacy Fellow, and he recently wrote for Cal Matters about why Pell Grants need to double in amount per student. Edgar joins us now to talk about it and his experience as a college student during the pandemic. Great to have you on Insight.
Yeah, no, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what inspired you to write about this topic for Cal Matters? How, from a personal level, what drove you in that direction?
Yeah, definitely my experiences going into college. I'm first generation. I'm a first generation citizen as well, because I wasn't born here. I was born in Mexico, but I grew up undocumented in East Oakland, and now I'm going into college as a permanent resident, almost a citizen. So definitely my experiences growing up and having to afford college, because for me, you know, growing up low income, it wasn't much of a choice to go to college. It's sort of a given. If you want to achieve upward social mobility, which a lot of low income first generation people do.
Right.
And so for us, it's like getting a college degree is one of the most like straightforward, guaranteed ways to do that. And so, yeah, navigating college expenses, both direct costs, which are counted in your tuition, as well as indirect costs, which are not, something like transportation, something like food, and all these other added cost textbooks can sometimes be very, very expensive.
And let's face it, where you live in the East Bay is some of the most expensive housing on the planet. And it's not easy to live and go to school in Berkeley.
Exactly. That's true. I grew up in East Oakland, Bay Area. It's very expensive here. And it's very unfortunate because I love where I live. It's a very beautifully diverse location. And it's both, you know, a blessing and a curse, because you're getting to learn and you get to experience so many diverse perspectives. But at the same time, some of the people who've lived here the longest are being, you know, pushed out by wealthier income earners who can afford the high rents.
Yeah. Sounds like you're on the path to citizenship. Were you, when you started college, were you a dreamer status?
I was not. Junior year of high school is when I received my permanent residency. So I got to apply to FAFSA my first year.
Mm-hmm. And so why do you think increasing the maximum dollar amount of Pell Grants can prove to be an effective solution for students today?
Yeah. You mentioned how I wrote a piece on why the Pell Grant should double. And an important statistic that I found in my research in writing the piece was that back in 1975, when the Pell Grant was first created, it actually helped students pay for over 75% of their in-state tuition. And you take that statistic and apply it today, and the same amount the Pell Grant offers covers less than 30% of in-state tuition. Mm-hmm. So you take that into consideration and you realize how the Pell Grant has been neglected for so long. And at the same time, in-state tuition has risen, you know, dramatically, exponentially. And so that's definitely a reason to consider when talking about the Pell Grant, because it has been neglected for a really long time. And a lot of students are suffering because of it.
Yeah. In addition to the Pell Grants, how else would you like to see the issue of college affordability addressed for students?
That's a really great question. I definitely think other grants, as well as like the Cal Grant here in California, would be very helpful, as well as getting zero cost textbook degrees, which is a new concept. It's very popular in the community college system, but it's essentially students don't have to pay for textbooks because they're taken into consideration into their degree. And I think this would be very, very helpful because some pathways are much more expensive than others. If you take a STEM pathway, a science, technology, engineering, maths pathway, the textbooks there tend to be more expensive because of access codes and all these other added costs compared to maybe a liberal arts where the textbooks are less expensive. So zero cost textbook degrees takes that into account and makes sure that the students have not to pay too much in textbooks.
Yeah, because that can be crippling.
Yes, it definitely can for students.
Well, Edgar, I wish you the best, and I certainly hope that you reach that degree, reach that citizenship, and all the dreams that you have moving forward. Thank you for sharing your experience with us this morning.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me on.
Edgar Oseguera Martinez is a third-year undergraduate student studying business and public policy at UC Berkeley, Cal. He's also an Aspire Student Advocacy Fellow, and clearly is going to be something big someday. Thanks a lot, Edgar. All right, that does it for Insight today. You can learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. Thank you to producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta. Technical director is Mark Jones, and engineer Antonio Muniz. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. I'm Randall White. Thanks, as always, for joining us here on Insight. We'll catch you back here tomorrow morning.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.